Oikos presents 15 Seconds of Strength.
Here we go. Steve's got a trunk full of groceries and no one to help him.
Oh, that's tough, Jim. Looks like a 5-trip load at least.
He grabs the first bag, the second. Bob, it looks like he's trying to do it all one trip. He shimmies the door open, steps over the dog. Oh, and he stumbles.
Oh, right into the kitchen without missing a beat. Mm. Jim, now that's a man who eats his protein-packed Oikos.
With 15 grams of complete protein in each cup, Oikos Triple Zero can help build strength for every day. Oikos, stronger makes everything better.
Riley Herbst from 2311 Racing here, and you know what grinds my gears? Waiting for coffee. But instead of counting frappes and lattes, I fire up Chumba Casino. No apps, no fuss, just fun social casino games to pass the time. By the time my coffee's ready,
order for Riley.
I've already taken a few victory laps. Next time you're stuck waiting, make it entertaining. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The New York Jets have found another new way to lose in this challenging 2024 season. Welcome into the Flight Plan Podcast. I'm Tim McMaster along with Zach Rosenblatt. We have our frequent flyer miles covered this week, Zach. You just got back to New Jersey this morning from Miami, where you watched what ended up being a depressing football game. I'm in Dallas right now for baseball's winter meetings. I got up at, it's Central Time here in Dallas, so I got up at 2:30 Central Time in New York to catch a 6 a.m. flight. I am dragging, and I'm sure you are too, but we are going to power
through
here.
Let's see how you do with the button. Let's see if you click the right buttons and when you're this tired.
No,
you know?
Chance. No chance, especially because I'm in a new place with different stuff.
I know you guys.
We're lucky that
external
we're
in factors. Right
now. Yeah. Although I have a, I don't know if you see, there's a, go this way. If you're watching on YouTube. Christmas tree behind me. We're at the Anatole Hotel in Dallas, which is all these winter meetings hotels are always huge. There's this one, which has like three atriums and like seven restaurants.
It's like NFL owners meetings is always like that.
Yeah. The one in Nashville, though, is none other. There's a river running through the Gaylord Opryland in Nashville.
Oh, cool.
The best one of these is San Diego because it's not a giant hotel. It's just like a big hotel, but it has like one lobby bar where the entire baseball world hangs out. Mm. If like a deal happens late at night, you hear this like buzz rise up.
So we should peel back real quick, a little baseball talk. How did everybody react last night?
I was going to say, well, I got here this morning, so it's still chatter.
Oh,
but
right.
If you are listening or watching the show and you're a Jets fan, hopefully you're also a Mets fan. And not a Yankee fan. If you are a Yankee fan, apologies. But hopefully you're a Mets fan, because at least then you have the Juan Soto era to look forward to. Unbelievable. 15 years. We're just to baseball talk instead of the Jets.
Yeah,
15
yeah,
right. years, $765 million. God. It could be $800 million opt in to the extended part of the deal.
Which is crazy. Escalators to get it to $800 million is like a crazy statement. But Rich Cimini tweeted it. The Jets were bought by Woody Johnson for, I think, $635 million in 2000. I mean, obviously, they'd be worth like $7 billion right now. But just like the relativity, like how much money he's going to get on that contract is like more than LeBron James has made in his NBA career. Like things like that. It's just like.
Well, and bonkers. I mean, it's not the biggest contract annual value. That's messy.
Yeah,
that's,
which is the part like, people
Messi
are forgetting
like
about.
$150 million a year or something like that. But it's the biggest total package.
Totally.
And like, honestly. Like, does Steve Cohen even, like, it's just like, eh, you know.
It's nothing. It's fine. Dropping the butt. Well, as I was texting with somebody.
Not worried.
I was texting with somebody. They were like, at that point, if you're the Yankees, like, just pay more. Like, what when you're getting to the $700 million, then what does, like, $20 million, what kind of difference is that?
You think they maybe got to the point, though, where it was just like, no matter what we do, Cohen is going to like just us. It's just he's playing a different game than every other owner in baseball. When you look at like value, like what he's worth compared to, and all of these owners are ridiculously wealthy, right? They're all billionaires, but there's like, as sad as this is to say, there's like a billionaire and then there's like Cohen billions, right?
Yeah. It's like, that's like the Mark Cuban level of wealth. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. All right. But should we talk about the Jets?
I normally would make fun of the Mets because I grew up as a fan.
You can't make fun of the Mets anymore.
I know, but yeah, we'll see. We'll see. We'll see how it works out. Okay,
Mets. We will see how it works out.
Speaking of things always working out, let's talk about the New York Jets.
Although the Mets were close to a World Series a year ago, the Jets now officially 14 years without a playoff appearance, longest stretch in all of sports. So this is our four downs episode. So let's get right into the four downs of Sunday's loss, 32-26 to the Dolphins, a game that it felt like the Jets had in hand throughout and then let it slip away at the end. But we're actually going to start with the positive on this episode, Zach. Garrett Wilson, Devontae Adams gave us a glimpse, and maybe it's not positive because of where they are, but we got this glimpse of what could have been with those two guys, right? Wilson, 7 catches, buck 14, Adams, 9 for 109 and a touchdown. And what Wilson was doing against Jalen Ramsey, I mean, just give him the money.
Yeah. I mean, to your point, it's kind of a little depressing because this felt like the first game where we really got to see at their best what this could look like. And there was still stuff left on the field. Like, they didn't get to 30 points, which Rodgers alluded to you need. And if they got 30 points, they probably win this game. But my point being, Rodgers missed Garrett a few times. There was the play down the sideline where I know we said we're going to be positive. I'm already being negative. got a 42-yard gain down the sideline. Garrett got behind Jalen Ramsey. It was wide open. But Rodgers angled it a little bit too much to the sideline. So what could have been a 68-yard touchdown instead was a 42-yard reception. And there's another one that's kind of gone on Twitter. People have noticed where Garrett was open in the – I can't remember what the situation was, but he was wide open in the middle of the field. And he threw his hands up. Rodgers didn't see him because he decided pre-snap he was going to Devontae. He didn't throw it to him. And Garrett jumped up give me the ball. The frustration is very palpable with him. But yeah, I mean, those two they're two of, if not top 10 receivers, two of the 15 best receivers in the NFL. Garrett can just do amazing things. He was doing a lot of stuff after the catch. He was getting open again against one of the NFL's best corners, maybe ever, in Jalen Ramsey. He's still very good. I think I saw there was a stat on Next Gen that I think he had 97 yards against Jalen Ramsey, which is the most anyone's had against him in coverage since 2017 or something like that.
That's nuts.
But yeah, I mean, ultimately, and this was a big, I can't remember what we put as second down. I can't remember.
We're going to stick with this kind of it because we're going to flow into Wilson's post game. Yeah, okay, so you want to do that natural transition? Okay.
No, I'll talk Adams a little first because, we've talked about this a little bit. I won't keep repeating it every week, but And we talked about it with Will Parkinson quite a bit, actually. But I do think that the next GM should try to figure out a way of keeping him here. I get the sense it's not going to be possible if and when Aaron Rodgers leaves. I think Devontae either wants to go where Aaron goes or he wants to go where a quarterback situation isn't so up in the air. But him and Garrett together.
Is Aaron going somewhere, though?
Maybe. If he was playing like he did this last game, maybe somebody will want him.
He did play, yeah.
He played a lot better. Even if he missed stuff, he still was way, way better and good enough to win with kind of thing. But, I think Devontae and Garrett is a great duo. But and then if you remove Devontae from that group, all of a sudden you have Garrett as a number one. You're getting rid of Alan Lazard. Who else do you have? Malachi Corley was a healthy scratch in week 14 of a lost season. What are we doing? I could not believe it.
That's a great point. Why are you playing Lazard? Another penalty for just moving forward at the snap.
If maybe the coaches don't like Malachi Corley, or maybe he doesn't practice well or something, maybe they don't like his attitude, I don't know. But at this point, and Ulbrich is not going to be the head coach next year, so maybe in his head he's why do I have to, play these guys that don't affect me? I'm trying to win. But give this guy some reps, see what he can do. They just have not done that, or manufacture some touches for him. Whoever they hire next, coaching-wise, offensive coordinator-wise, whatever it is, I'm not personally of the mind that you have to hire an offensive head coach, but you need a great offensive coordinator if you don't. I just, for love of God, hope they find an offensive coordinator who's more creative than the guys they've used lately. I mean, Todd Downing's been better than what Hackett was, and LaFleur is better than both of them, but it's just
it's crazy that you just said LaFleur is better than both of them.
I know. I think he's aged very well. He really has. Because he was like, I know it, it feels like so long ago, and I feel like we maybe forget how like bad it looks sometimes, some decisions he made and players he wasn't playing and stuff like that. But when he, when this Jets offense was at its best, when Mike White was the quarterback, not Aaron Rodgers, not not Zach Wilson,
Mike effing White.
Well, that and Chris Trevler was at its best. So, but anyway, so at this, the receiver room has a lot of questions going forward, and that kind of gets into our second down.
All right, second down. Yes, after the game, Garrett Wilson seemed like, we talked about last week, Aaron Rodgers stopping biting his tongue, and it felt like after the game, maybe it was Garrett's turn to just start showing. And he always shares his feelings to a degree, but like it really seemed like the frustration came through.
I mean, he's ultimately, I say this often, he's like elite when it comes to the post. Like, he's such a good post-game player for us.
Elite post-game player.
I mean, he's an elite player, too, to be fair. Yeah, you know, I asked, my opening question to him was basically like look, how do you fathom losing this way this many times? Like, they've lost three times in a row when they had a lead in the fourth quarter, and they've lost five times this season when they had leads in the fourth quarter, which is a team record. And I'm like, how do you fathom that? Especially like, this is a different kind of losing. It's not like, you know, I know you've dealt with a lot the last couple of years, but this is a different kind. And he's like, you know, losing always stinks. And then he like, and this is the lead of my story. He like stretches his neck out and like stretches a little bit. I'm like, okay, here we go. Literally in my head, I'm like,
he's warming up.
He's either about to say nothing or like, because sometimes guys will get all fidgety when they're getting uncomfortable because they want to say what they mean and they can't. But it was the opposite. It was him like releasing the tension is how I described it. Because then he just said like, it's as if, like basically what he said is, it's as if we expect everything to go wrong. And so it does. Like, it's like a gene, like, which is not something I've ever heard actually say anybody say out loud. But I think people who follow the Jets have always felt that, like, it's an inevitability, like the same old Jets thing. As much as fans hate hearing it, it becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy. And that's what's happened. Like, the way the Jets have lost this season is unlike anything I've seen. It's like over and over and over again where they should win and they do five things wrong and it's over and they lost. And you can always feel it coming too. Like, it's the, you know, it's like an Aaron Rodgers pick six or like whatever. Like, there's just a moment where something happens and you're like, oh boy, here we go again. And it just does. And it's just like these little things. And that's kind of what Garrett was alluding to. And that wasn't his only, like, he had so many quotes that were just like so on the money to the point where I wonder if he's actually a part of Jets Twitter because he just gets it because he, like on a secret account, like not even on his account. Maybe he has a burner that he's just engaging with Jets Twitter because he had a quote about like, so somebody asked like, how shocking is it that you guys are 3-10 and you missed the playoffs? He's like, if you had asked me that in training camp, you know, when we were having all these great practices against these other teams and everything was looking good and we were all excited, sure, I would have been shocked, but I'm not shocked now. He's like, what I've learned is that, you know, we have to win when the regular season starts. Winning in the offseason doesn't matter. Winning in training camp doesn't matter. Like that's like the quintessential Jets like thing. It's they win the offseason every year and then they don't win in the regular season. So Garrett Wilson just gets it. And the crux of my story, you know, I kind of alluded to this in our big story in January. I think it got buried in there because there's so much other stuff. But like the idea that Garrett Wilson has told people, and I'm not the only one who's either reported this or alluded to it. I believe Connor Hughes has too. In addition to maybe some others, but that he's either told people or people have wondered in the building, and both are true, whether if things kept going the way they were, and this was what I was told last year, like Garrett Wilson was telling people that if things kept going the way they were, where he feels like he's not being put in position to succeed in this team, whether it's because of the offensive coordinator or quarterback, like he doesn't see himself staying with the Jets long term. And so we get to this year, he finally has a quarterback, the best one he's ever played with in the NFL, at the very least. Best one he's ever played with. And he's getting the ball, but he's being left open a lot of times. They're losing constantly. He's still not getting put in position to succeed. Nathaniel Hackett, like I heard the first 5 weeks, he was ready to explode about Hackett. And then, ironically, that's when Saleh was demoting him anyway. But like he just like time after time, the Jets have, you know, kind of ruined this kid's, like, not ruined it, but they've, like, I don't know, wasted, I guess is the better word. They've wasted his prime. Like, he's 3 years in, He's going to have three straight years with 1,000 yards and over 80 catches. One of only five guys to ever do that, I believe. Michael Thomas, Ja'Marr Chase, Odell Beckham, and Justin Jefferson. Like, really good group. He's one of only five guys to ever do that. Not just like, you know, the modern times or anything. I know it's a passing league now and all that. The Jets are not a passing team. They've had bad quarterbacks, which makes his more impressive than theirs, in my opinion. And you just, you know, I think we've seen flashes of what could happen when he has a quarterback who can get him the ball. But Aaron is also like pre-deciding where he's going a lot of the time. Anyway, my point being, like, I'm not saying Garrett Wilson is not going to be a Jet next year. Like, money talks. If you offer him $30 to $35 million a year, he's going to have a hard time turning that down. And if
have to do it this offseason, yeah, right? Because yeah, if you wait till he's 1 year away from free agency, yeah, you're not going to sign him. And yeah, I feel like Woody's
not only that, but you saw a lot of guys, receivers especially, have started to hold out when they don't get the money they want. Some ask for trades, but usually they just hold out. And even ones that ask for trades, sometimes they don't wind up getting traded. They wind up signing a new deal. You know, Ja'Marr Chase was holding out for a while. I think Deebo Samuel, there at one point, it was like they thought, Brandon Ayuk wanted to get traded, and then they signed him. Like,
Chase was holding in, right?
He was holding in. I imagine Garrett probably wants to see what the future looks like, who the quarterback is, who the coach is in particular, who the offensive coordinator is, the wide receivers coach, all that stuff. But I think as we sit here right now, like, I don't know that he wants to be a Jet long term, and I don't frankly blame him. But as I wrote in there, like, whoever they hire, the next GM, the next head coach, make him your number one priority. Like, legitimately, yeah, like, get him in your next office, be like, what are you looking? I'm not saying let him dictate anything, but like, sit him down. Like, what are the plays you like? What are the plays you like running? What are the kind of quarterbacks you like? Like, what can we do to make you happy? What's happened in the last 3 years that has annoyed you the most? And tell him, like, here's your contract extension. You're the highest paid receiver. You're the number three highest paid receiver in the NFL, like, whatever it is. Give him the money, lock in this sort of star who I think is good for their culture, and just go forward. I think you can have conversations about the rest of that 2022 class, but I think Garrett, do what you can to make him happy. Don't go overboard, obviously, but like, he should be the number one priority of the next GM, because when the next GM comes in, like, free agency's not going to have started yet or anything like that. Quarterback's the number one priority ultimately, but I think making Garrett happy enough that you don't have to worry every second that he's going to ask for a trade, I think, is going to be huge.
Because he could be such an asset positively, yeah, if he's there instead of the negative. All right. So many guys out. Breece Hall didn't play. Sauce Gardner didn't play. Tyron Smith's done for the year. So let's check in on the backups. Olu, very good again at left tackle. That is super encouraging going into next year. We've said, like, what that maybe means for, like, the coaching search and the GM search, just having that, like, pillar there, it seems like. And then the running backs, Braylon Allen, 11 carries, 41 yards on the ground, 4 catches for 38. And then Isaiah Davis showed a little bit again. And then finally, Brandon Echols. Just kind of like thoughts on those guys that were filling in for all these injuries and a chance to kind of show themselves here.
Yeah, you know, Olu, he didn't have as good of a game. I think he gave up 4 pressures, and including, I think, the sack in the fourth quarter that kind of they get into the Dolphins. I can't even remember. I'm tired. They get into the Dolphins
part of fourth down.
Yeah. Actually. Yeah. They get, well, I'm just talking about this specific play. They get to the Dolphins part of the field, have a run that loses yards, and then they get sacked. Olu gave up the sack. But otherwise, he was really solid. And I think they have a stud at left tackle. Like, I really do. Like, I think he's going to be a part of this young core that we're talking about when you talk about Sauce, Garrett, Breece, Quinton Williams. Like, he's a part of that group, I think. Braylon and Isaiah, I really was curious to see how they looked, and I was impressed. Isaiah in particular, I think he's kind of come up recently in a way that I didn't expect. And, you know, it's led to a lot of conversation about what they should do at running back. There's been a lot of chatter on Twitter and even in the comment section of my stories about, like, whether the Jets should get rid of, not whether, it's a lot of people saying they should trade Breece Hall this offseason. I think it's gone a step too far. I'm not saying they shouldn't be open to it, because whatever new GM comes in, he should be able to do whatever he wants. And if you can get a really good value for a running back in a contract year, like, sure, go do it. But I think people are, like, undervaluing what Breece brings to the table. And I actually love the idea of an old school three-headed monster. Like, maybe we've learned this year that Breece can't be a bell cow. Like, maybe that's, like, a reality, because he's not someone who's getting, like, in between the tackles, the short yards. He's someone who's trying to score on every play and he's really explosive and he can do that, and he's a weapon in the passing game. But I think if you work in Braylon Allen in particular, but both Braylon Allen and Isaiah Davis, if you work in all three of them, you know, I think of the Eagles in 2017, and I think this trio, I mean, with Breece at the top, is more talented, but when they went to the Super Bowl, the Eagles traded for Jay Ajayi. He was really good. He was before he got before he tore his ACL and kind of fell off. They had LeGarrette Blount and they had Corey Clement, like three guys that were really solid and complemented each other really well. And I think the Jets should be trying to do that because weirdly, the NFL has gone back towards running backs having value and teams run the ball, like being the best in the league. Like teams that lean on the run, like establish the run, the Eagles, the Ravens, like there's all these teams that are
Steelers
that have prioritized running the ball. And so I lean on keeping Breece Hall. And I mean, even you look at his numbers, you know, last year he was coming off the torn ACL and he still ran for almost 1700 total yards. I was just looking this up. There's only 9 running backs in team history that have had 2 seasons of 1,000 or more yards from scrimmage. And the guy in the 70s, John Riggins, is the only other one that did it as young as Breece has done it at 22 and 23. So I think that people have undervalued what he brings to the table. And I get it because this is a lost season and he hasn't been great. Like there's definitely been weeks where he's been unimpactful. I think the run blocking has been inconsistent, but I keep him. I pair him with Isaiah Davis, who is better than I thought. Pair him with Braylon Allen, who I'm high on his potential, and you go forward. I know that was a little sidetrack, but I just wanted to get that off my chest. And then the other one you mentioned was Brandon Echols. I mean, he's not a guy that ideally you play for 17 games as your starter, but he had some moments yesterday. You know, I think he got targeted quite a bit, maybe trying to avoid DJ Reed a little, but Tyreek Hill is going to beat you no matter who you are a little bit. I thought he was pretty solid, and he's been a pretty solid filling guy. Amazingly, the Jets have 2 interceptions this season, and they're both Brandon Echols when he like subbed in when other guys were hurt. But you know, he's going to be a free agent, so I'm curious to see what they do there because you're losing DJ Reed. I wonder how much you can. I mean, drafting a corner, there's some value in that because it's a valuable position and you get it on a rookie deal. But would you bring back Brandon Echols if you're not sure what you have in Quantes Diggers? Like, I'd consider it if it's like a reasonable 1-year contract kind of thing. So that's another one to keep an eye on in terms of free agents.
All right, 4th down, end of the game. So frustrating. You mentioned it. They're in field goal range. They're close. If they do things right, you can run the clock right. You see teams do this all the time, able to run the clock out, kick the field goal with either no time left or very little time left. But the way it plays out for the Jets, they lose ground on a run. Rodgers takes a sack, which forces them to throw the ball to get back into it, to field goal range. And they end up leaving 41 seconds for the Dolphins, something like that. And then instead of kicking the ball away into the end zone and just letting the Dolphins start from the 30, they're able to return it to the 45, barely have to go anywhere. They get 20 yards. They kick the field goal to tie it. And then this is history in overtime. It's just like, it's these little things, right? Every week it's a different little thing. This is the first time we saw this one to cost this team a game.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's details. Like, I don't know if that's coaching or players losing focus or it's the self-fulfilling prophecy of it's all going to fall apart. But like like I said earlier, it's just crazy. If you look back at the season, there's so many games where they did like 3 or 4 things, like very dumb or, you know, unconscionable things or mistakes they made in key moments where it cost them the game. And ultimately, I think it is coaching because I do think this team has talent. And good teams don't consistently lose this way. They would lose this way with Saleh too. The difference was, I feel like we kind of forget this now. Is usually, not counting this year, like the last, like 2022 and 23, the Jets were usually like coming back from a deficit. They were not usually the team that had the lead. Like that was usually the case. Like they had to grind out like a low scoring game, like things like that. They didn't have a lot of games where they went into the fourth quarter with a lead, and they have not been able to handle that. And that's ultimately on coaching. I don't know if it's conditioning. I don't know what it is, but to make the mistakes that like the Devonta Adams one staying in bounds. Like I think Aaron Rodgers audibled at the line of scrimmage to that play. Like, why are you calling a route to the outside when you need to want to kill time? Like the idea is you need to stay inside. You need to kill the clock. And he throws it to him. And I think there's legitimate question about whether the officials didn't call the play dead soon enough because of forward progress. I think that Devonta alluded to that, but ultimately, you know, that's a misfire. And then on the kickoff, Anders Carlson is supposed to kick it out of the end zone. He doesn't. He kicks it to the one, and they have a great return, and then quickly they go up the field. And then by then you're like, all right, well, if the Dolphins get the ball in overtime, it's over.
And it was what happened.
It was quick. They were very quick.
Eight plays.
And I think the most maddening thing about this, and it was especially prevalent on that last drive in overtime and the one before that in the fourth quarter, they got no pressure at all the entire game. Like, legitimately, they had one sack. No, not sorry. They had zero sacks, zero QB hits, and very few pressures. Hassan Reddick had one pressure the entire game. He's been an absolute disaster. I ranted about him on Connor's podcast, so I won't do it again here. But he's just been an absolute disaster, and I can't imagine anybody's ruined their value in recent years more than that guy. But to get zero QB hits over a four-quarter game is just absolutely bad. And Ulbrich's excuse was, well, Tua is really good at getting rid of the ball quickly. Like, he threw it 48 times. Like, how are you not hitting him a single time? Like, that's insane. And I believe on his touchdown at the end, he held on to the ball for more than 3 seconds. So it was a pretty embarrassing effort by the defense overall. The offense, they got to the red zone five straight times to start the game and scored in all of them, but only two of them were touchdowns. And I pointed that out and people got mad at me on Twitter. But the point is, like, if you don't score touchdowns when you get to the red zone, it's hard to win games when you're not good enough to stop the other team too. So there's just like so many little things that add up to what is a terrible season for a terrible team. And it's depressing and it's annoying because we all thought it was going to be better. You and I were even optimistic. We started off the year trying to be very positive. Like, we made it a point to be positive this season, and they've made it impossible. To be fair, Janae Coakley was also on there, and Janae's an actual friend of mine. So
yeah, Taylor just commented, wait, Zach is seeing other podcasts.
Yeah. That's what I was doing. Janae from SNY.
Did you say Janae is actually a friend of yours?
Yeah, she's an actual friend. Whereas Connor is just, he's, as they say in Parks and Rec, Connor is a work proximity associate, is what I would call him. But yeah, so their end rant, terrible season, terrible drive, terrible fourth quarter. Team is terrible. Season can't end soon enough. Let's start the coaching search, the GM search, which is kind of exciting to a degree because I'm very curious to see who they can hire. And there's some interesting coaching candidates, and maybe Bill Belichick's going to UNC, so that removes which I thought he was a lock to be the Giants coach, frankly. So, and it's like legit. Like, from what I hear, it's like a legit thing to the point where he might legitimately go there, which is just wild.
I just don't understand why. Like, I thought the whole point of continuing to coach was to get 14 wins and pass.
Maybe he's trying to prove a point that he doesn't only want that. I don't know. Like, he's pretty old. Like, it's not like he has a lot of years to coach in college and go to the NFL. So
it's also, I know it would be kind of a slam.
I don't know. Maybe this is going
to
be a
bet. To go from Mac Brown to Bill Belichick is like, I mean, I'm not trying to be ageist or anything, but like,
yeah,
it's a lot of years.
I will say, and maybe this is a bad joke, but it's later in the pod. So he is dating somebody who's like 23 years old. So maybe he found the fountain of youth and he wants to be on a college campus and relive that part of his life. I don't know.
There you go. All right. Well, this has been fun. The new location. Taylor asked if I'm at the mall, if you missed the beginning. No, we're at the Anatole Resort in Dallas, Texas, a massive hotel, the winter meetings. There's a buzz around here, though. Hopefully you're Mets fans. Juan Soto is coming to Queens. All right, what are we doing later in the week? We're not sure.
We'll figure that out. We'll talk about it because, it's getting a little busy right now because I'm working on a couple things. And you're traveling a lot. But, yeah, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, it's a rough week.
We're going to try to do one, but we'll see.
Yeah, jet fatigue setting in. But thank you for everybody who did tune in. I know it's hard this time of the season, but like, we appreciate you, everybody that's watching the stream or listening, and we will talk to everybody soon on the Flight Plan Podcast.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. Funny thing about being fast, you end up waiting a lot. First to show up, first in line, then just waiting. Me, I rev up Chumba Casino. With over 200 social casino games, no slow lanes here. Why sit around when you can spin? Start your engine. I'm already racing. Your turn. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. That's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.